Hey everyone, this episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download of your choice and get a free month subscription to Audible by going to audibletrial.com/missspots. Choose from over 180,000 titles, including Chris Jericho's latest book, The Best in the World, At What? I Have No Idea, and Dusty, Reflections of Wrestling's American Dream. Hey, maybe you want something else. I got one of Nick Offerman's audiobooks, and he narrates it himself. It's hilarious. It's great. It's entertaining. Get any audiobook available that you'd like for absolutely no cost. It's free. Go claim your audiobook for free today at audibletrial.com/missspots. Now, enjoy the show.
Time to play the game.
Welcome back to the Miss Spots podcast, a professional wrestling podcast from the perspective of two lifelong fans that simply don't have enough wrestling already going on in their lives. So we decide to talk about it on the internet through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, and Geek Life Radio. My name is Mike, and with me as always is the Billy Gunn to my Bart Gunn, Kevin.
And also, just so you know, I am the superstar of the group. You will fade into obscurity, beaten by Butterbean, and I will go on to be one of the most classic tag teams of all time. Sorry, Mike.
At least I won that one thing.
The Brawl for All?
Brawl for All,
yeah. But then you got beaten up by Butterbean.
I'll take it. All right, so we were not here with you guys last week on the heels of the Payback pay-per-view. We both had work. We had a conference in the same location, and we drank a lot together and talked about wrestling a little bit, too.
And we ate a lot. It was one of the worst weeks for my body in the history of my body.
I'm now on a steady diet of fiber, trying to get all the rest of that shit out of my system.
Terrible, terrible, terrible.
Philadelphia will do that to you with all its fine foods made of meat and cheese and bread.
We also got to watch out for them wolves.
Oh, them wolves. Fun inside joke. All right, so we're going to go over Payback a little bit. Yeah, it's going to seem a little bit late to the game, but you know what? This is our show. We'll do what we want. We won't dwell on it too much.
Let's not dwell on it, but I mean...
It's a thing. It happened.
The fans demand to know what our take on everything is.
Maybe there's even people who don't know what happened, and they're just waiting to hear from us.
I think it's possible.
There's probably one out of... None that that is going on for. All right, so Payback. We had two pre-show matches that went down on the whole shebang. First off, Dolph Ziggler took on Baron Corbin, a match that I feel like this was the Intercontinental title match from WrestleMania for us, to where, like, there's no way that Baron Corbin can lose this match, right?
Right.
Wrong. And Baron Corbin lost the match.
The important things to take out of this match was Baron looked unaffected by a bigger kind of, you know, maybe the biggest match of his career so far. I mean, it was on a pre-show, but it was on a, you know, yes, he was on the WrestleMania card in a multi-man match. No doubt that was probably the biggest event for him. But as far as actually having to be a part of a match that he was one of the two participants in, more of a highlight on him, this is a pretty big deal for him. He looked like a pro out there. It was a good match. And quite honestly, although I would have liked to see Baron dominate the match, it was going really well until it stopped going well when we got a roll up. And it just, I don't like it. I don't like seeing, yeah, they played it off as, you know, he's the rookie and he got too cocky and Dolph lured him in because he's a veteran. I just thought Baron's got to go over looking strong. He's got to kind of dominate. It was what it was, as they say. It's a terrible phrase, but everything leading up to the finish, I thought was all positive stuff.
I agree. It's like WWE's a little gun shy sometimes of pulling the trigger on something that's different. Like as much as Dolph is not in their top echelon of superstars right now that they want to book for, putting him up against a new guy, it's almost like they're afraid to put him under, really, that big new guy. And like, we shouldn't build this guy up too quickly. Dolph, you're going to win via roll up. So that Baron still looks strong.
How do you feel about this? Cause I'm old school. I like a good old fashioned winning streak. I like a guy who comes in and doesn't get pinned, his shoulders to the mat for a while, beats up a bunch of people, gets some head of steam. I mean, I think it worked wonders with Rusev. I mean, this is countless times. This is territory booking, right? A new guy comes
Goldberg, in. Goldberg, Tatanka. Yeah.
Well, so many guys. I mean, just the litany of superstars that have come into an area and been undefeated for a certain period of time. Maybe that's passé now. Maybe it's not necessary. Maybe they still do it too much. I mean, we did it with Rusev just recently, a year or so ago. Bo Dallas, one of the
to
worst.
To a lesser extent.
Yeah, to a very lesser extent. But I still like it. I think it works in the right situation. I think it would have worked with Baron. If you're trying to tell a story about the rookie getting schooled by the veteran and learning from it, okay, that's one story to tell. But I think we saw by the booking afterwards, and this is kind of a telltale sign, the booking after this event seemed to me they weren't even trying to tell that story. Mm-mm. Because what happened in the Raw afterwards and then the Raw a couple nights ago, this last Monday, shows that, oh, he was just going to go over anyway?
Yeah.
That's what I don't understand about it. A match finish is only what it's worth in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
Great feuds and great programs between people are built on when you can kind of step back and admire the whole thing. And not everything has to be perfect the whole way through, but I think this showed that they didn't have a real plan.
Mm-hmm. The second match of the pre-show was the United States Championship match with Kalisto against Ryback. And boy, did this blow away our expectations.
Was this the best Ryback match you ever saw?
Absolutely.
Hands down. I'd never seen him look more motivated. I'd never seen him. He went. I mean, I don't want to say move for move with Kalisto, but he kept up pace-wise with Kalisto. And Ryback is a kind of an immobile ball of muscle, mm-hmm. for the most part. He used brutal offense. He pulled out some new moves. There were really good transitions. The guy, from the moment he stepped through the curtain and he did his little CM Punk mocking, from that moment, I just thought that guy had like fire in his eyes like I'd never seen. And then we come to find out, he's sent home afterwards.
Pretty probably his last match in WWE.
For at least the time being. I mean, you never know what can happen down the road. Everyone always comes back.
Yeah.
But Ryback has some contract disputes. He's aired his grievances on Twitter. After the best match I've ever seen, I was like, wow, this is the Ryback we could be seeing. And then he's gone.
Yeah.
This was so much better than the WrestleMania match. I thought was fine. It was good. This was far and away a better match, and really featured Kalisto, and I thought it was, and he went over clean. It's a beautiful match.
That's what I was going to say is, as much as we're praising Ryback for his performance, Kalisto looks strong in this. Like, normally, WWE's MO with these big guy versus little guy matches is to have the big guy dominate, and then have the little guy maybe flukily even a word?
It is now.
Win the match. Just out of nowhere, out of desperation. And they didn't do that here. Kalisto got a good amount of offense in, and he looked like a fighting champion in this. He won with his finisher, which we were extremely happy about. I'm, as much as we rag on Ryback, and we rag on Ryback a lot, I would have liked to have seen this maybe even go on one more month.
I mean, it finally felt like a feud that had something to do with the ring. I still didn't know where Ryback was as far as a character. Apparently he had his weight belt said pre-show stopper.
I didn't notice
that. I didn't notice it either. I read about it later on. So obviously not happy about being on the pre-show. Kind of a dig at WWE. Probably one of the reasons why they're now have parted ways, at least for the time being, on contract negotiations. But I mean, Ryback looked good. And there was that one time when Kalisto did a weird corkscrew springboard off the middle rope to the outside.
Yeah.
And he looked like he was going to die. He looked like his head and shoulder were going to smack into the mat, and Ryback stepped in and protected him like he's supposed to. And just being a professional, I couldn't tell you how much I enjoyed this match. This match really, to me, set the standard for what we were going to see, which is really, really good wrestling throughout the card. Whatever we thought about the finishes, whatever we thought about the booking, the wrestling up and down this card was spot on. It was really, really good.
Yeah. So, main card now. We started things off with the finals of the WWE Tag Team Championship number one contender tournament, sponsored by Bootios, because they make sure
you ain't booty.
Fought Villains against Enzo and Big Cass, a match we were very much looking forward to. Unfortunately, as we've seen played over and over and over again, Enzo Amore suffered quite a serious concussion off of a kind of botched spot there that looked like he was thrown in the ropes and maybe he was supposed to slide under the ropes, but got himself caught up and just whiplash banged his head up against the canvas and was out cold. Vaudevillains win via referee stoppage, knockout, whatever you want to call it. A very scary moment that people were concerned whether or not this was a work or whether or not it was real. After watching it as many times as WWE's replayed it, I think that you see the urgency in Big Cass as he got off of that apron and was over there in like 3 seconds after he saw that. I mean, that should be a sign that something wasn't right.
Well, I thought it was pretty apparent. I mean, obviously the referee throws up the axe. We've seen that a couple times in a worked a worked angle because the fans are smart to it. But it was pretty apparent. We thought it was much worse than it was.
Yeah.
When we first saw it, we thought that the way his head had snapped and hit the rope, like we were worried that he broke his neck.
Yeah.
And the fact that he just got a severe concussion, I mean, that's no laughing matter. We'll see how long he's going to be out, and it's a shame. As far as the Enzo Amore character, this could not have come as a worse time because these guys debuted red hot on the main roster, and they were on their way to being one of the most over acts in the company. As far as Enzo Amore, the person, I don't know his real name, but the person behind the character, all we can say is, man, we hope he recovers fully and he can get back in the ring. But not more than that, we just hope that concussions can, we see what happened with Daniel Bryan, with so many people. They build up on themselves. The little ones hurt your brain more after a big one. So maybe...
No laughing matter.
Who knows where this is going to go with him. But, you know, we hope to see him back in the ring in some capacity soon. It sucks because from what we hear, the plan was, what we had kind of hinted at, was the Dudley Boys interfering, Vaudevillains going over and going to challenge the New Day. I read that a couple places. I might have been Meltzer or someone saying that they had heard that backstage. I'm almost positive I'm wrong when I say about Meltzer, but it was somebody that had reported this. And so that kind of helps a little bit with the booking because that means that the Vaudevillains are supposed to go against the New Day anyway. We saw that they kind of have to spin their wheels with Big Cass a little bit on Raw the next couple weeks, but we're just happy he's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And long short of it, this is professional wrestling. It's storyline driven, but and the fans, the crowd, the air was taken out of them. They weren't making nasty chants at him. People were concerned, and I think everyone handled it with a lot of class and a lot of dignity, and I really have to applaud the fans, the announcers, and everybody for what they did. And seeing Big Cass as broken up as he was, I mean, it just shows how much those guys are friends. They love each other, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hope that he takes his time on his recovery, and he comes back, and he's good to go at that point. So after this, of course, whoever has to follow this is in a pretty tough spot. And it's Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Two guys who probably can. If you're going to put any match on next, if they're going to bring the Chicago crowd out of this just muck, it's these two. And we got a very nice match out of the two of them.
You know, for a lot of people, this was like really the first installment of Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens. We know that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know the extent that you do, because you've seen them in ROH, and you've seen them, you know, wrestle all over the world in the independents. I don't have that experience, but I do know the NXT story between these two guys. I was complaining all along that they weren't doing enough to introduce Sami Zayn to the WWE audience. They finally did it with the video packages building up to this. The video packages were brilliant, and this match did not disappoint in the least. They could not have had a more unenviable task than going after this with a crowd that was deflated. They got the crowd back into it. They built the crowd. The match pacing was gorgeous. This match was really, really good. They built the crowd back in. They got them hot. And we would have expected to see Owens maybe cheat to win this match. They didn't. He beat him clean with a pop-up powerbomb, which is pretty cool. I don't think Sami Zayn hurts at all after losing this match. Do you?
No. I was curious as to where they were going with things after this, and he attacked Sammy after the match, which was something that I thought was going to happen. Regardless, I think my quote was that Sammy does not leave this match standing up,
mm-hmm.
and he laid it into Sammy after the match as well. So that went on, and the very immediate aftermath of that with him claiming now I'm going to go after my Intercontinental title was odd, because I thought at that point, really, they're going to abandon this storyline that quickly. But as we saw towards the end of Miz and Cesaro, that was not the case.
Well, that's a good example of something that seems a little bit peculiar, but then there's a storyline reason for mm-hmm. it, and they bring you back around. I thought this whole thing, this is one of those times where we actually saw a pay-per-view event, a special event, whatever you want to call it, have cohesion from match to match,
yeah.
and tie things together. It was like, instead of just being like, okay, now it's the Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn portion of the show, and then we don't talk about them or really about them anymore, and then there's this portion of the show. This was a kind of a cool, cohesive kind of thing, and obviously they had ideas in mind for Extreme Rules, but Kevin Owens calling Byron Saxton into the ring, the entire shtick there was A-plus mic work. Mm-hmm. Kevin Owens he continues to impress, and then says, oh yeah, you're welcome, I will come and sit in on commentary with you. Body language, facial expressions, Kevin Owens, the entire package.
When he muffs a line, he covers it so quickly.
Wonderfully, the interactions with Byron and Cole. I mean, this guy is one of the best. He's one of the most entertaining people I've ever seen in the sport, mm-hmm. honestly. And he just carried that entire segment. But then we're leading right into the next match, which was Miz and Cesaro. He provided good commentary for Miz and Cesaro while also getting himself over, which yeah. almost no one does. It's either I'm getting myself over and I'm shitting on the match, or they're going to call the match. Owens called the match, talked about the match, talked about himself, got Miz over in a lot of ways. He started out by saying, oh, I don't care who I face. I don't care who I face. And then started rooting for Miz because he wants to face the Miz.
Yeah.
I mean, there was just so much good storytelling in there. And then, I mean, what did you think about the Miz and Cesaro match?
I thought it was fine. And normally a overbooked finish like that would draw the ire of some people. But when you have Sammy then come down, attack Kevin, and you know, okay, this is going to lead to a multi-man thing, which others would say is a bad thing. You just came off of a multi-man story on the IC title leading into WrestleMania. Then you only have 1 month of a singles thing. Then you go back to multi-man. But you know what? You're getting four excellent performers involved in a title picture. Four people who can all carry themselves in the ring, on the mic. I mean, Cesaro's maybe the least on the mic.
Of course, yeah.
But I mean, he's probably the best in the ring. You're setting yourself up for a great story and an absolutely great match that we're anticipating now at Extreme Rules.
Yeah, and this feud just, I was scratching my head in the beginning, and now since I've seen the functionality of it since, I like everything they did with this. I really, really liked the fact that Miz and Cesaro had a competitive match going back and forth. Miz used his wife, of course, but he worked the shoulder. He did he did a really, really good job. He went back and forth with Cesaro. Cesaro ragdolled him around, right? I mean, there were some really, really good portions of this. Miz ends up going over with a roll-up, distraction roll-up after Sammy comes down to attack Owens on ringside. Then Owens jumps up on the apron. So that was a little bit weird, a little fishy. But it also gives Cesaro a reason to be pissed off at both those other guys for ruining his title shot, which is good. Miz got a handful of trunks in the roll-up. You know how much I hate a distraction roll-up. Yeah. One of my least favorite things in the world. It's like they have a dartboard in the WWE office in the back, in the writing room, and it's just like 95% of it is distraction roll-up, and then like the center's like clean pin. And that's why they keep going. It's like, oh, well, we really suck at darts. We can never hit a bullseye.
But once in a while, they get a dusty finish.
Yeah, dusty finish on the outside
yeah.
somewhere, some like thin line. So, yeah, it just... I was really impressed with the ring work. I thought they did a great job in this match. And I think that they did, considering what they were going to do, the finish worked and made sense. And that's what I think it has to be accounted for at the end of the day.
Yeah. Dean Ambrose was taking on Chris Jericho next. We got good match between the two of them with Dean going over clean. It was interesting finish. You don't see this too often where a guy struggles to get the finishing move on, which Dean was fighting with Jericho in order to hook the
powering him into it. Yeah.
I kind of dig that, although he didn't get it as cinched the lock of that double arm in, but it still worked, and we thought that was going to be the end of Jericho's run for a little bit. I've come to the point, if Jericho's tweeting anything about wrestling in character, think the opposite of what he's saying, because yeah. he's going to lie, he's going to troll. We know now that that's not the case. And also, I think Jericho's little tantrum after that match showed that there's still more to this than meets the eye.
I love the finish of this. I like seeing something a little bit new or a different twist on something before, powering into a finisher as opposed to hitting it out of nowhere. I think we've had too much out of nowhere, and this worked, and because of that, it was fresh. I didn't have a lot of good things to say about this match in the first 5 minutes of it. I thought that it was a little bit slow and plodding. I don't mind slow and plodding, but I didn't feel like these guys were working really well together. And by the end of the match, I was really into it. I think they did a good job of pacing it for the most part. So I'm excited to see these guys go at it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the feud was built pretty well, even though we're talking about plants and talking segment.
I was just going to say, and we'll talk about this in a little bit when we get to Raw. I think that this was a fantastic build up to a feud that showed Dean in a more serious light, and now we've gone back to silly Dean. But we'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah.
Women's Championship match with Charlotte defending against Natalya, Ric Flair in Charlotte's corner, Bret Hart in Natty's corner. We had a very good match going on, and then we got the screw job finish. We got Little Natch, Charles Robinson, as the referee, calling for the bell as Charlotte had Natty in the sharpshooter.
Will they ever get over this? Will this ever be a thing that we don't have to? They have recreated the screw job between WCW and WWE 40 times. They did it the year after it happened in the WWE with Rock and Foley, I believe.
Yeah, with the I Quit match?
Yeah, I mean, it was an I Quit match.
No?
No, that was when Rock turned heel and sided with the, it wasn't an I Quit match. It was in the title tournament. At Survivor Series
Deadly Games.
Yeah, 98. Yeah. And that's when Rock turned heel and joined the corporation.
That's, right.
That's the first time, when Rock had his big heel turn. So they've just done this so many times. You and I just looked at each other like, really?
Yeah.
There's so many ways this could have ended. This is what you decide to go with. And yeah, we have Little Nate Charles Robinson. And yeah, a lot of people that are of our age know that he was like Ric Flair's referee and all his like protege in WCW. So it's a cute little nod to that. But overall, this was just pretty stupid. I didn't care for this at all. And it was a shame because the match was good. Charlotte looked great. Natty looked great. The crowd was dead, I thought, for this match. But Charlotte had some really nice, she pulled out a really nice moonsault.
Yeah.
Some pretty cool transition moves that they were doing back and forth. Some good mat wrestling. They've got some chemistry together, obviously. And it's a shame to lose it this way. It sets up another match for Extreme Rules. We got the dueling sharpshooters at the end, which I thought we might get. Mm-hmm. Can this be the last time? Can this be the last time we get the screw job finish in this way with someone from the Hart family involved? I mean, please.
Yeah. And then main event time, WWE World Heavyweight Championship match with Roman Reigns defending against AJ Styles. Overbooked to hell. It was a fine match, but overbooked to hell.
Oh my God, I thought so. I just thought this was such an overbooked mess.
So we pretty much had three falls in this match.
Pretty much.
The match first ended via count out with a win for AJ. But Shane came out and restarted the match saying that it would be a no count out match. Then the match ended in DQ when Roman punched AJ in the dick, and then Steph came out and said, no, we're restarting this, and there's going to be no disqualifications as well, which of course leads to Gallows and Anderson getting involved, the Usos getting involved. Eventually, we have Roman win the match, but this match showed that Roman can once again, that Roman, when paired with the right person, can always put on a good match.
Listen.
And AJ is a stud.
AJ came up looking huge in this match. I thought it was really impressive for him. I thought it was really impressive what Roman did. You know, one of the things that I loved the most about this match, both guys, and forget the Gallows and Anderson, and forget the Usos and all the DQ count-out stuff. If you watch the body language of both guys, neither one of them really gave away if they were babyface or heel. Neither one wrestled the match like a babyface or a heel.
Yeah.
Reigns played it down the middle. He had heel mannerisms when he couldn't put away AJ. They both bailed out a couple times after some skirmishes to reboot and kind of regroup themselves. They both kind of played that line to the point where either one could go either way. And we don't see that very often. And I think they're in a really unique position with both those characters because Roman, we all know his problems with being over with half the crowd and not the other half. We all know that AJ is a darling in the internet community and maybe doesn't play as well in Tulsa, Oklahoma, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think the structure of this match and the booking of this match was really, really well done. And then they threw in all these god-awful nonsense stipulation restartings of the match, which I think really, really hindered it. I just didn't care for it by the end. And, you know, it ends up that Gallows and Anderson had no impact on the match, so the WQ stipulation didn't matter. Ends up, none of the things actually mattered for what we had at the end. And then we had Reigns going over, which we kind of figured that he would anyway, but I had hoped it would be with some help or hindrance from somebody else. I thought they were hopefully to tell a little bit more interesting story. I just want to say one thing.
We forgot something.
What's that?
About Vince.
Oh, I have it. I was going to remind you about that afterwards. It just wasn't that important, I guess. The phenomenal forearm spot onto the announce table where he hit Reigns going through the announce table. That was a cool thing.
I enjoyed that.
Reigns was not laying on the announce table. It was a little bit different a spot than we're used to seeing, and it was super cool.
Yeah, I really wasn't expecting that to happen because normally table spots are so contrived and
someone prone.
Yeah, and it caught you a little off guard. We did forget to mention that Vince was supposed to determine whether Steph or Shane would have control of Raw, and he decided that both of them will. So, and that led into this match and then played out a little bit afterwards as well.
And after a long, it was kind of a long segment. And, you know, Vince playing the CM Punk chance a little bit.
Yeah.
Which obviously are going to happen in that situation. And yes, Shane and Steph have equal control. They were both playing babyface there, keeping the match going so that the fans could get a clean winner. One of the things I think comes out of this and has kind of happened since then, Anderson and Gallows, have they really done anything?
Not really.
Have they really been impactful?
They've interfered in a number of AJ's affairs, and they beat the Usos in not convincing fashion.
I haven't seen them do anything that really makes them dangerous. I haven't seen anything. They haven't really made
their debut. That's about it.
Right, but they haven't made an impact. They haven't caused a championship switch. They haven't really beat anyone down to a point where it changes a storyline and impacts something. They've just kind of been there, and I think that's a big mistake. Unless they're holding off for another big debut for them to really take the next step, so far to me, I don't feel their impact has been that impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it's a no DQ and they come down, you expect them to factor in the finish at least. They don't.
Yeah.
Not at all.
We're not going to go over Raw the night after that.
Well, real quick, what do you give Payback on a scale?
I will give, yeah, that's true. I will give it a B-.
I'm going B+. I like this pay-per-view. I didn't like some of the finishes, but I love the ring work. And I really like the character work, and I like, the Intercontinental title scene seems so much better now. Women's title scene, I hate the finish of the match, but we still have some really good stuff going on with Natty and Charlotte. Kalisto looked amazing with the U.S. title and Ryback's greatest match of all time. Owens and Zayn are just phenomenal and put on an incredible match. And Reigns and AJ went out and had a great match and stole the show until overbooked bullshit ruined the match for me. But that's, I can't let that mean that match wasn't incredible and they didn't put on good work.
To me, it's things like Ziggler going over Corbin, the screw job finish, the overbooked finish of the main event, the no finish of the tag team match, which, I mean, it's not their fault.
Yeah.
But that's what gets it down a little bit for me. But I still, this was probably one of the pay-per-views that we've been looking forward to the most in recent memory. I don't think that it didn't deliver. I certainly enjoyed myself watching it.
You know what? I'm going to put it down to a B.
Okay.
And the reason I'm going to take away a point or two there is because for all the talk of the new era and the new this and the new that, they really didn't do anything new or inventive. They did the same screwy finishes that we've come to expect every time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to B-, I'm just going to go B.
Okay. All right, so we're not going to go over the Raw after Payback. We'll instead go over this week's Raw because, I mean, Raw's whatever.
Wow.
So
passion.
Starting, we have a recap of last week's main event of, which was Roman and the Usos against the Usos, against the Club, as they're now being affectionately called, AJ, Anderson, and Gallows.
A creative name. I don't know how they ever came up with it.
I'm not even a member. I don't know how I get away with it. Raw is in Omaha this week, so in theory, that should be good for Roman. And actually, I think it ended up being good for Roman. They announce that the same match that was the main event last week will happen again this week, but elimination rules. Yay. Y2J comes out, and he says that Dean isn't here because he gave him injuries, including vertigo. That's a thing.
I think he actually told him he gave him a DVD of Vertigo by Alfred Hitchcock.
Ah, gotcha, yeah, gotcha.
So I want to clear that up for you.
Instead, his guest is the remains of Mitch, the plant, from Dean's talk show segment set. He shows tweets about how Mitch was trending on Twitter last week and talks up how silly it was. Eventually, Big Cass comes out, talks up the new era ad nauseum, and tells Jericho to get out of his way. Jericho decides to walk out on things before he's called S-A-W-F-T.
Soft.
Jericho tries to attack, and he eats a boot. I thought that Cass looked good on this. I thought Cass looked good last week too when talking by himself. He's short and sweet, but he's getting a couple little zingers in there. But in his own mannerism, they're not so well thought out like Enzo's are.
I think Cass has come a long way in his promo and the way he relates to the crowd. This segment worked pretty well for me. I love the fact that Jericho took something that was utterly idiotic in Mitch DePlante and then turned it against the crowd for talking about Mitch DePlante while talking about Mitch DePlante.
Yeah.
It was completely meta. And I kind of appreciated that. And, you know, we've taken our shots at Jericho recently, but his, since turning officially heel again, he's just been a breath of fresh air as opposed to my crazy uncle Chris Jericho that he had been before.
Yeah.
So he did a really good job in this. And when Big Cass comes out, I'm like, what the hell's Cass doing out here? Are they going to split him up for the time being? Is Enzo really going to be out for a long time? I really hope they don't do that. I think that they work best as a tag team, at least for the time being, if not for a long time. But it was good to see him interacting with Chris Jericho. This is new. The new era thing, and this is going to be a fucking running joke throughout the entire podcast, probably throughout the next couple of years of WWE programming, they must have said the term new era 60 times last night. I mean, is that fair? Every single character that walked on screen and grabbed a microphone said new era. Now, I thought they were selling baseball caps. But apparently, that's what they're now calling. They had the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
And they had the new generation, and then they needed to come up with a new name for the era that they're in now. New name for the era they're in. New era. Let's call it the new era.
And we need a name for that group with AJ and Anderson and Gallows. It's kind of like the Bullet Club. They're a club.
Yeah, they're a club of guys, and we need a name for a club of guys that used to be the Bullet Club. Bullet Club. We can't use club. Let's call them the club.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the creativity.
Hot pocket.
The creative juices are flowing and the creative team right now. But I mean, all that being said, that was an effective segment.
Yeah. We get Paige and Charlotte announced for a match later on in the evening. Also, Dolph and Baron Corbin, as JBL, called them, in their rematch later on. Back from commercial, Chris Jericho begins to butter up Steph, and the new era has said a hell of a lot. Steph says that Cass versus Jericho is going to be the main event, and does Jericho's whole never ever again.
Well, interesting, because we see Steph.
This is a playoff of their past relationships, okay, which I enjoyed.
Which I like, but at the same time, I mean, she has been playing a heel for years, and now she's playing kind of a tweener.
Yeah.
Like working with Shane, and this is interesting. I like that. It's different. We get Big Cass and Chris Jericho announced the main event of Raw when we have an elimination match that involves Roman Reigns and AJ Styles.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting. I was like, well, I'm intrigued. That'll be an interesting thing to see.
After this, we get Dolphin Baron.
That's when we get Darren Baron.
Darren Baron coming out for their second match. Corbin gets a talking head promo on his entrance. They feel each other out to begin with, slow start, but eventually it leads to a big clean win for Corbin with the End of Days. A very slick transition into that.
Snake eyes off the top turnbuckle into End of Days. Really smooth transition. The transitions that Corbin and Ziggler had in the ring on Monday night were really, really good. Corbin continues to impress me. This might have been the slickest I've seen him in a match. I know it was just a match on Raw. It was a short match on Raw, but it did a really, really good job. Sick deep six.
Oh,
in the ring, which is just very impressive looking. And I'm all about Baron Corbin right now. I want to see whether or not they continue this feud with Dolph, but the fact that he goes over clean on Raw, what, 8 days after he gets that roll-up victory, Dolph gets that payback? I don't understand that.
Just do it at the pay-per-view.
Just do it at the pay-per-view, and then set up, if you want to keep it going with Dolph wanting to get revenge, then set up the next match.
Yeah.
Which you think, as close as they are to Extreme Rules, will probably get a rematch with these guys again.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm really digging Baron Corbin right now.
I am too, and I'm going to be, I'll say that I'm so into Baron Corbin right now that I even like his new pants, which almost no one on the internet likes.
You heard it here first, folks. Mike likes Baron's pants.
We get a promo from the club. Though there was one very important thing that they did not touch on that I was really hoping they would, what their stance on alfalfa sprouts is. Because I'm for them, but I guess I'm not in the fucking
or for
club.
Or Philly toothpicks.
Then we get Charlotte, Flair, and Shane talking backstage, and it turns into them talking about how Rick is going to be banned from ringside for the match at Extreme Rules. And Shane goes, you know what, Rick, you're banned from ringside tonight in Charlotte's match against Paige. And this was after a whole lot of bicep slapping from both Shane and Rick. But it sets up for what you're going to assume is Charlotte losing later on in the evening. Then we have Fandango versus R-Truth. Who cares? Truth wins. Moving on. Steph and Shane announce a triple threat for the Intercontinental title match with Kevin Owens, Cesaro, and Miz. Sami Zayn pops in the picture and he says, hey, I think I deserve to be in this match as well. You know what? How about I fight The Miz tonight? And if I win this match, you put me into the match at Extreme Rules and make it a fatal four-way. Shane and Steph are like, I like this idea. They book it, sign the papers, I assume, at some point later on. And we got it for later on.
You know the great thing about this? That could have easily been announced as Sami Zayn in that match, right? They didn't have to have a match to get him in. But they did. So that made the match that Sami Zayn had on Raw mean something.
Yeah.
So they made a match that would have just been a throwaway match of those two wrestling each other just to wrestle each other before the pay-per-view mean nothing. Now it means something. It's a simple thing, and they don't do it nearly enough. So I give them praise for that.
You mean the writing team's not always trying to fit square pegs into circle slots. Sometimes they know what slot they're supposed to be putting it into. Yes, that there was a euphemism there.
Said for me, I don't know where you're going with this.
All right, Natty's on commentary. It's Paige versus Charlotte. Excellent match. I thought that Paige looked more motivated than she has in months. I also believe that she does the Flair strut better than Charlotte does.
Oh, incredibly. I mean, it's almost like she is an illegitimate child of Ric Flair,
which is believable.
Yeah, very possible.
And Flair does come out at one point, and this causes some ruckus, which you thought might lead to Charlotte being distracted and rolled up. But no, it actually ends up working against Charlotte when Shane comes out and says, hey, you're not supposed to be down here. Security, get him out of here. Charlotte's distracted, and then she gets rolled up. Yes, distraction roll up, but you kind of expected that when they announced that Flair wasn't going to be at ringside. I wish that this built more for Paige because she looked great in this match.
She's been lost in the shuffle, and we've seen that they're having a hard time booking more than one women's. I mean, we haven't seen Sasha Banks.
Yeah.
How hot and over was she at WrestleMania, and she's not doing anything right now. So there's a lot to be desired there, unfortunately, in the women's division. But Paige did. Her offense was brutal. Wonderful superplex. Stiff kicks. She looked really, really good. Chasing Charlotte around. It was awesome. Natty was the one that jumped up on the apron first to distract Charlotte with no provocation, which that was a lot of character for the babyface, but maybe.
And we saw some more of this later on.
Right. Maybe that's turnabout's fair play. But yeah, we get a distraction with Rick coming out there. I'm fine with that because it lends to the story, I guess. But I agree with you with the whole, like, put Paige and Sasha Banks in a feud. I would have enjoyed that more than Golden Truth and Fandango and
Fandango Dust.
Oh, I'm sorry, Beautiful Truth and Fandango Gold Dust. Yeah.
Well, they want to go with Goldango. I'm going with Fandango Dust.
I like yours better.
Yes, I do as well. A recap of Jericho and Cass promo. Then we get Miz versus Sami Zayn. Good match. A really sick moonsault on the outside off of the barricade by Sami. That looked a little scary at first, but he connected with it. Sami wins clean with the exploder into the Huluva kick. And Sami is in the IC title match with a fatal four-way at Extreme Rules.
This is another excellent match where it shows that Miz is really undervalued by a lot of the fans. He did a great job in this
even
match.
The smart fans.
Yeah.
Like, you would think that you would get to the point where you understand he's really good at playing the heel role. Really good. And he is good in the ring. He's no Daniel Bryan.
No.
But he can absolutely carry himself in a match.
He sped up his pace, which has been one of my big problems with Miz before. He sped up his pace. He's increased his brutality and his aggressiveness. And he's always had great mannerisms. He's always had the ability he's always made people want to hate him. Mm-hmm. And now with his wife by his side, I think it works. I think everything about the Miz character right now works, and I'm glad that he's involved where he is. And there's a reason why he's helping bringing Cesaro and Sami Zayn to the next level. I think it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And then after this, we have a Becky Lynch interview in the back. She's interrupted by Emma. They have a little back and forth. And Emma says, well, maybe you should be watching your back. And from out of nowhere, an attack from behind on Becky Lynch. And it's Dana Brooke. The team of Dana Brooke and Emma from NXT are reunited on the main roster. Dana is still probably a good bit greener than the women, but she has a character that is perfect for her role. It's hard not to dislike her mm-hmm. with the character that she plays, and she plays that character excellently. I'm all for seeing her on the main roster with Emma. If it puts Emma on TV more, I'm for it.
I like those two as a team. I thought they did a great job at NXT. I think that Emma and Dana together really helped revive Emma's career, which I think was very cool because Emma has a lot of untapped potential.
They were beneficial to each other.
They were. Dana still has some rough times, I think, with promo. She had put in a really good match with Asuka.
Yeah.
A few months back, but then she was hurt. I'm excited to see this, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, another body, another woman being put into a Raw spot, and where's Sasha Banks?
Yeah.
That's my only problem with this.
I would agree.
I want to know where Sasha Banks is.
I mean, we're happy that there is now the second storyline really right. going on for the women.
Very happy to hear that, or to see
but
that.
It sucks Sasha? To have to see Sasha be the odd woman out
right.
in the situation.
It would be like having Dean Ambrose come up short for the world title against Seth Rollins a year or so ago, and then just not being on TV for 3 months
mm-hmm.
or several weeks. You know, that's weird.
As if Gorgeous Truth and Fandango Dust gave me not enough reason to turn my brain off, Darren Young and Bob Backlund are a thing, apparently. And I don't mean thing as in that because Darren Young's gay, but like, so Bob Backlund's going to be his life coach, but he doesn't know how to be a life coach. He knows how to be a wrestling coach, and wrestling is life.
I listened to Bob Backlund on the Jim Ross podcast.
I did as well.
Ago, and it was an engaging and wonderful listen. Hearing him talk with such respect. Mm-hmm. Bob Backlund's an amazing man.
Yeah,
and
absolutely
I
is.
I have nothing but respect. I mean, I really, really enjoyed listening to his stories, the way he carries himself, the way he talks about people. He also is probably insane. And if he's not insane... He plays insane. He's either a crazy person or he plays crazy better than anyone has ever played. You know what he should be doing? He should be Dean Ambrose's crazy coach because he could teach Dean Ambrose a thing or two about being the lunatic fringe.
And it doesn't involve hot dogs.
No, not hot dog carts at all. It looks like they played a vignette. It looks like they played one of the outtakes. Like at one point, like he's screaming things, and then Darren Young's like, "No, Bob, I'm talking about this." Oh, blah, blah. And then it's like, and they're split screen. It was very weird. And just for the fact of how weird it was, I am super intrigued.
There were some weird pauses in there.
He's just like staring at the camera and.
Will you be my life coach? Yes, I will be your wrestling coach.
I've never been a life coach, but it was super bizarre. I can't wait to see more. I'm so much more interested in this than the Puerto Rican tourism board ads. I am much more interested in this and several things going on. I want to know more about these guys.
Really?
Oh,
I really didn't take you for having enjoyed this.
No, it's so nuts. I was so perplexed. And thinking about it now, I'm like, I want to see what happens next Monday. Like, do they just scream at each other on split screens? Is that going to be part of what? I don't know.
And now in the New York office, I guess we'll see where the hell this is going. Zack Ryder's backstage talking to Shane McMahon, blah, 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 best day of his life at WrestleMania. Kevin Owens pops in and says a bunch of good things shooting down Zack Ryder. Not that I think that Zack should be shot down, but we get Zack versus KO. If Ryder wins, he takes Kevin's spot in the Fatal 4-Way.
You know what I like about this? This was not going to happen, but they still set a match with a stipulation.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, it was a match with a stipulation. We all know Owens
it gave Zack something to fight for.
It gave him something to fight for. It made the match mean something, and maybe he would win it somehow and be involved in this match. Stipulations, matches, that matter. And how many backstage segments did we see tonight? And didn't the vast majority of them, weren't they short and sweet, to the point, and furthered a storyline or gave us more perspective? You can do all these if you want. If you take out 30 minutes a long talking segment and put in a bunch of small backstage segments that further storylines, all the talking's still the same, but it's more focused, and I like it. I thought most of the backstage segments hit.
We got another backstage segment right after that with Roman and Oos number one and Oos number two. There were boos from the crowd when they were first shown on screen. Tom Phillips is cited, and Roman talks about it doesn't matter if it's 3 versus 1, 2 versus 1, 1 versus all, because Roman knows that oh so well, that his team's going to win. Short, sweet, to the point.
Now, your roommate, our very good friend, did raise a very good point. When Tom Phillips walked in, he said, "Gentlemen," and he looked at the screen and said, "Can you be called a gentleman when half your face is painted?" And I don't know the answer to that.
Very good point, yeah.
Please tweet us, email us, tell us what you think. Can you have half your face painted and still be a gentleman? I wonder. I look forward to the results.
After this, we have the Lucha Dragons theme song hit. Both Sin Cara and Kalisto come out, but Sin Cara is announced for the match. I wrote down here, Sin Cara to get crushed by Rusev, I'm assuming. And then when we come back from commercial break, I wrote in, yes, it is. Lana is introduced to give formal introductions to Rusev, like an old-time throwback, but this time in English.
I like it.
I'm for it as well. I do think that when Rusev runs out from the curtain of sorts, that he should have pyro when he makes his pose, because it just seems like he comes out, goes, and just nothing happens from that. Pyro guys, get on that. Awful, awful, awful distraction roll up. I mean, really even an awful distraction. Kalisto interference, blatant Kalisto interference.
Interfered, kicked Rusev in the head, and then we get a roll up.
That had a 5 count.
Oh, that was so bad, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So the ref was supposed to be, you know, tied up with Lana. So we get Rusev having to struggle through a 5 count on his shoulders on a roll up from Sin Cara. Listen, I understand you want to have Rusev not be. They announced, by the way, that Rusev is going to fight Kalisto at Extreme Rules.
Yeah, he won the Battle Royal last weekend.
Right, he won the Battle Royal
last week.
So we have a match set up. I don't understand why you have to have Sin Cara pin Rusev. I don't care if Kalisto kicked him and hit him in the head with a chair. Why do you have to see that happen? I don't like this at all. And I also, and it, you know, whether the ref was just out of position or there was bad timing, you know, that happens. But yeah, Rusev looked really, really good a few weeks back. He wins a battle royal. He has a kind of a different look. He slimmed down a little bit. Lana's back at his side. Let's give this freaking guy some momentum again. I don't. Yeah. And plus, Kalisto, you're a babyface. Stop kicking people in the head in the middle of a match.
Yeah. We get a Primo and Epico vignette. This one is all of their vignettes kind of mashed together, saying that they are going to debut next week. And apparently their tag team name is going to be the Shining Stars. There's that. Six-man elimination tag match. The Club, sans Alfalfa Sprouts, taking on the Usses, the Samoan family. Carl Anderson eliminates Us number one with a roll-up and a handful of tights. Seeing something here with roll-ups? Us number two, then Schoolboys Anderson for an elimination, evening out the odds. But Us number two is then eliminated during the commercial break by AJ. Roman eliminates Gallows, setting up just AJ and Roman. But Anderson hits Roman with a chair while they are fighting on the outside, causing a DQ for Roman to win. Donnybrook ensues. Then we get an oddly long stare down between Roman inside the ring, AJ outside of the ring, on the apron, looking like he wants to hit the phenomenal forearm. Roman's kind of like, hey, here's a chair. Here's that chair that you weren't going to hit me with last week. Come on. Come on. It felt like it was 5 minutes, even though it was probably 30 seconds, but still, 30 seconds in TV time of silence and just standing there is a whole lot.
Well, they were going for intensity on the stare down, and I don't know that they hit the mark there. I don't like that AJ jumped over him and then kind of rolled out of the ring and left.
That's a heelish
thing. That's a heel thing to do, which I guess, okay, we get a little heel mannerism from AJ. That's fine. Maybe it's just because I'm still holding out.
I would like to point out the crowd was very split on Roman. Like, there was probably just as many cheers for him as there were boos, and the same for AJ. Yeah. AJ's team got booed a hell of a lot.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, they're you know, they where were they? Where were they at?
Omaha.
So that's a crowd that's probably going to be behind Roman, quite honestly. So yeah, this is another example of Anderson and Gallows. Meh. Why are they intimidating? Because they get beaten with roll-ups, because they don't really do anything, because they don't really cause any real...
They're from New Japan and they're friends of AJ's.
It's not
pretty
impressive.
Much all they're going off of right now.
They're not impressive. They're not doing anything really to announce their arrival with authority.
And by saying that they're not impressive, we're not saying that they themselves aren't, because I myself have seen that they are impressive in their New Japan work, but they haven't been booked to look strong thus far.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to eliminate those two and just have AJ and Roman, have them, like, get purposely DQ'd. Have them just attack the Usos with chairs to take them out of the equation. I mean, there's different things they could have done for that, and they just have not chosen to make them look dominant, which I think is a mistake.
Yeah. After a commercial break, they come back to a Finn Balor NXT spot talking about how he's going to be on NXT this coming Wednesday. After that, Michael Cole drops a little hint in there mentioning how he used to be in the same club as...
Oh, I didn't hear that.
...as AJ Anderson and Gallows.
Hmm, interesting.
Planting some seeds there, maybe. I sound like Yoda, I do. Then we get Zack Ryder against Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens wins with a pop-up powerbomb to keep his spot in the Fatal 4-Way. I don't think that this had as much drama to it as maybe last week's Battle Royal, to where Zack was built up to be the last person against Rusev and trying to get some sympathy from people. Like, oh, Zack might win it again. He might pull. He's the ultimate underdog. He always wins when the deck is stacked against him. Didn't go on here either, but it gives him something to do. It gives, as you say, something for them to fight for. and in advancing storylines with things like that is absolutely perfect.
And because of that, it keeps the crowd in the match a little bit. It keeps them. There were some times where Zach hit a couple moves and the crowd get a little gassed and they thought maybe he could pull it out. And because of that, it makes Zack Ryder look like a bigger star. Yeah. And he gets a chance to go in there and listen. 3-4 months ago, Zack Ryder was getting trounced by Bo Dallas or whoever, you know, whoever was out there. He was getting beaten up in a 2-minute match. Now he's out there with a competitive match with Kevin Owens. Yeah, he loses clean. He's supposed to. He's in a position to lose clean to Kevin Owens, but it's at least a competitive match. The crowd's into it. I thought this was good.
You know, I'm gonna take a little rant here for just a moment, and I've openly admitted that I'm a fan of the independents. I'm a fan of Ring of Honor. I mean, I haven't watched a whole lot of recent Ring of Honor, but I was a very big fan of Ring of Honor when Daniel Bryan, Nigel McGuinness, Homicide, all of them were still wrestling in Ring of Honor. And I really enjoyed those shows, but there were points in the shows where I was just like, because matches were going on just to have matches. There was no story based behind it. It could be a very fine technical match, but when it's just two guys going out there and wrestling time after time, it becomes a little bit boring. I wanted to see the storylines that were going on. I wanted to see Colt Cabana feuding with Homicide. I wanted to see Ring of Honor against CZW and all of that. You can't just put a match out there for the sake of putting a match out there and expect to always bring in the crowd's attention. Sometimes you just get bored with that. And I'm glad that they are adding story into the things that they're trying to do, even though they might not work all the time, like Gorgeous Truth and Fandango Dust. But they're at least trying to put everything into a story. So there's just that. We get another recap of Enzo's concussion. Please, please stop. It's hard enough to watch the first time, let alone the 27th time. We get Renee interviewing Big Cass, a lot more instances of New Era. And then Freddie Prinze Jr., who I thought was Enrique Iglesias, plugs his new show. And New Day is out for a promo. Xavier sings A Whole New World, of sorts. The Dudleys come out, and we have the Dudleys against the New Day in a tag match. And eventually, the Vaudevillains come out and attack Xavier. This leads to a distraction pin.
Someone out there has all the results for every, like, let's say last year's Raws. I want to know percentage-wise how many matches end in distraction pin. Because if it's less than 45%, I would be shocked.
I think I would be too. Anything else you want to add to that?
This is okay. I mean, it's furthering the Vaudevillains and the New Day's storyline without having them wrestle each other directly. That's good.
I would like to throw out, I think that Bubba deserves a singles run.
Bubba, the only person that talks better smack in the ring while they're wrestling is Kevin Owens.
Yeah.
Bubba's number two. Mm-hmm. He screams things at people that are absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
I can't remember what
crossface. Then you crossface them, and what happens after that? You crossface them again.
That's good.
All right, main event time. Big Cass is out. Now it's Jericho's turn. But oh wait, he's attacked during his entrance while the lights are out because you see his jacket, his light up jacket, being attacked by some dark figure that we don't know who it is. It's Dean, and this figure, Dean, steals the jacket and runs to the ring in the dark. We still don't know who it is, but it's Dean. And then the lights finally turn back on, and then we see it's Dean. And Dean then proceeds to destroy Jericho's $15,000 jacket, as Jericho said, somewhere in between his stupid idiots. And this is pretty much how the show ends. we get a little bit of a brawl here. Cass corners Jericho, throws him into a barricade, then throws him back into the ring to Dean. I think awful way to use Cass. He's just there.
Well, they set this up as him saying, this is the biggest match of my career. And then he doesn't get the match.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, if I'm Big Cass and I'm 7 foot tall and you can't teach that, I'm going to go in there after Dean does the dirty deeds on Chris Jericho. I'm gonna give him a big splash in the corner, an Empire elbow, and I'm pissed off at Dean for spoiling my first ever Raw main event. I mean, what the hell? You could jump the guy and steal his jacket any time. You have to do it right now.
Yeah,
I thought that was I understand why they did what they did, but I don't like when you set up a Raw main event, a Raw main event match. I know it doesn't mean a lot. We get 52 of them a year. But it's still something, especially big for a younger guy. At least give me the match. Even if it's only 3 minutes before Dean comes out, let him go back and forth a little bit. Give Big Cass that few minutes to interact with a megastar like Jericho. I didn't care for that. And I also just thought it was absolutely ridiculous to watch Dean destroy his jacket.
Yeah.
This
is silly Dean coming back again because it's over a plant.
In a plan and a jacket. And I've always thought that Chris Jericho's light up jacket was about the stupidest thing in the world. I don't know what you think about it. I just think it's idiotic.
I think it's great for his heel persona.
It's fine for his heel persona, but I just think it's so silly looking.
I should say should be the only persona that Chris Jericho has.
That's a good point. But I just think it's just like Dean's like, oh, he's destroying his jacket. This is what we're doing.
We got a shot of Shane and Steph in the back talking, being all happy with one another, like they're getting along. And then as Shane takes a phone call, Steph gives a big long stare to that Shane and Vince picture that's just precariously sitting there on a stool. And Raw signs off about 4 minutes past the hour. We typically get a 10-minute overrun on Raw, not even five. And this is out. They could have had a match and still had Dean jump Jericho at the end. But no, this is how they tied it up in a neat little bow.
Yeah. Overall, I liked a lot of the things that happened on Raw. I like the fact that you're doing actual storylines, that you're keeping people involved, that you have matches that actually mean something and matter, storyline continuity and all that jazz. It would have been better if they would have done the end of the episode, the stare down with Roman and AJ.
And even leading up to Payback, Roman and AJ weren't the last thing on most of the Raws.
Right.
Sure. So it and even more tonight, or a couple nights ago.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like the title picture is their focus point of the show, because normally that goes on last. But anyway, that was Raw. We have a few weeks to go before Extreme Rules. Just pulling up here what the actual date is. May 22nd. So 2 weeks,
yeah.
Before we have Extreme Rules taking place from the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey, and I guess we'll be back. Will we be back next week?
I think we should do a show next week and do some NXT.
Actually, we should, because that's our lead into that pay per view.
Oh, I thought
2 weeks from this past Sunday, so it's like 12 days.
Right. I think yes. We will be doing a podcast next week. How about
yes.
that?
Yes, we will.
we will
preview Extreme Rules. We'll talk some NXT. We'll clean some house, and do all those things that we typically do on this show, like banter. And I'll compare Kevin and I to a tag team.
And you will make several Mitch Hedberg joke references
that
most
no one
people
will
have no idea.
Oh, fun fact. Yesterday, while we were watching Raw, we just jokingly brought up that WWE never does shows in Alaska or Hawaii.
Yeah.
They're doing a show in Hawaii.
Are they really?
On June 29th. And as of right now, the rumor is that it's going to be a WWE network special.
Okay.
Called Bash at the Beach. Matches taking place on this card include, so far, Kevin Owens against Brock Lesnar, Asuka against Charlotte, Cena against Nakamura.
Really?
Guess what we're watching?
Probably that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
So we'll probably, between our next episode, a lot more of that will get confirmed up, and we'll talk about it at length at a future time. But until next week, remember to check out our website, misspots.com. You can follow us on Twitter at MissSpots. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. Subscribe to the podcast in one of many different fashions, or all of these different fashions, on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, or listen to us on Geek Life Radio every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. Until then, you guys enjoy some wrestling. I got a new catchphrase. Good night, good wrestling.
Wow, professional.